There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours, and I am glad you're here. Lots to do on this April 15th. Yeah, it's tax day. Also, it's not been talked about a whole bunch, but it's been 6 years now since the Boston Marathon bombings. Of course, Boston Marathon, weather cleared in Boston in time for them to get the marathon off, but what happened back in 2013, we'll talk about that on today's show as well. Plus, we'll take a look at the latest from the city of Mobile and what comes next between the council and the mayor. And when we talk about things going on in Montgomery, I'd like y'all to talk with this guy and read this guy, our buddy Todd Stacey with Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How's it going?
Going good. It's where are we? Are we on the back nine of regular session now in Montgomery? Have we made the turn?
We're just a third of the way done.
We're just not even to the halfway point.
Yeah, Tuesday is going to be their 10th legislative day. So I know it seems like a lot longer, but, you know, that special session really kind of messed with everybody's timeline, I think. So it's only the 10th day, but can't get greedy because they really start filling those days in pretty quickly once we get going here, and I think that'll happen.
Well, it seems, I guess the reason it seems like, number one, you said you had special session to add on to the regular session days, and they seem to, and not seeming, I think they are, taking on more issues than they did last year. Last year, you know, you had everybody wanting to get elected or, you know, get reelected. Now you have the start of the quadrennium and let it fly now, right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, there are no shortage of issues. And you're also right about last year. I mean, that tends to happen in election years. They're short. You know, they didn't even bother to worry about the gas tax last year because they knew in an election year, man, that it was going to get bogged down, so let's just wait till the following year. So, yeah, this year, yeah, shoot, plenty of issues. This week, they're going to be talking about the budgets a lot, and there's also some issues cropping up, like civil asset set forfeiture, and, you know, Auburn's talking about not liking the budget allocations that it got. So it's starting to get interesting.
Yeah, I want to dive into a couple of these. Number one, talk about civil asset forfeiture, something we've done on this show quite a bit. And, you know, I have Senator Orr is going to be on next hour, and I will ask him more about this. But it was just last week on the show I had, because you write over at aldailynews.com that I think it's district attorneys around the state support the civil asset forfeiture, and I had our district attorney, Ashley Rich, in here talking about a bunch of different subjects, but we got to that one, and she pushed back on me real hard on that, why it was a good thing, and Alabama District Attorneys Association is opposed to it. So what's being asked by this Senate bill from Arthur Orr, and what's the pushback on this?
Well, this is an issue that's been around for a long time, but really just recently they started to have major legislative push. And, you know, civil asset forfeiture is the process by which police and sheriffs or state troopers or what have you, they're allowed to seize your property, whether that's cash or paraphernalia or cars or even homes, in the course of an arrest or, you know, they're investigating a crime. And a lot of times these asset forfeitures, these seizures, it becomes way before an actual conviction. And that's what some of these groups are arguing, and what the bill sponsors are arguing, is that you ought to at least be able to be convicted of a crime before the government steals your or takes your stuff indefinitely. So That's basically the argument. Of course, law enforcement pushes back and says, no, we need to be able to seize the cash of a drug dealer or a car of a drug dealer. The things that we're doing, things that were gained by committing a crime, they need to be able to seize those things because it helps deter crime and helps them fight crime. They definitely push back on this. Last year, there was a big push on this. You saw conservative groups and liberal groups come together to say this needs to stop. But at the end of the day, law enforcement was too powerful for them to really get over the hump. So here comes Arthur Orr again. He's got his Senate Bill 191. We'll see if he can get it over the hump.
Yeah, okay. It says, you know, his bill, as you describe it, would prohibit law enforcement agencies from seizing the assets of people who haven't been convicted of a crime. And, you know, that is... That sentence right there is where I end up butting heads a lot of times with whether it be the district attorney or, you know, friends in law enforcement and all that. If somebody is convicted of dealing drugs or whatever, take their stuff. They break the law. The stuff was used. I get it. Like, I have no issue with that. It's this idea that the stuff can be found guilty even if the person is not. I mean, that it just... And yes, the majority of the time, it probably is, you know, gained illegally. But that's not our system. That's not how our system works.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, every time there's a bad circumstance, you know, then that kind of ruins it for everybody, right? And I don't think we should be on here, and I certainly don't want to come across as, and I don't think Arthur Orr wants to come across as somehow being against law enforcement, understanding that probably 90% of the time this is handled correctly, and it is effective and all that. However, that's why laws exist, is to protect against rogue law enforcement. And let's remember, you know, that's why we have the Constitution. That's why we have state laws. It's to protect us from the government in most cases. And the police, they're the government. So I do think you're going to see a lot of negotiation on this bill. There wasn't a lot of that last year. It was kind of, you know, my way or the highway on both sides. And so the district attorneys, they have come to the table. They earlier this year, voluntarily started compiling a database full of all the information from civil asset forfeitures. So at least they were saying, okay, we want to be transparent about this. But that's not nearly far enough for some of the groups that want to make this law.
Yeah, and that's the issue here, that if you you look at it, is there any way to temper it without doing away with it? You know what I'm saying? Is it all or nothing, or is there a medium approach to this? I don't know. I'm not asking that rhetorically.
Maybe so. I just know that, you know, one of the things that the law enforcement were upset about is that they said Senator Orr didn't consult with them or... know, come ask them to give their opinion before he filed the bill. At the same time, this was around last year. What questions did they really have? So, you're going to see a lot of discussion. You're going to see some back and forth. But, you know, I'm never afraid to let the legislative process work out. You know, you can't. Very rarely do you get 100% of what you want, and very rarely do you lose 100% of what you want. So, I'm sure there's probably a middle ground.
All right. Remind folks, too, we're going to run the break and come back, but I want to make sure folks sign up, get your email in their inbox each weekday morning. How do they do that?
Sure. It's really easy. The website is just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Go right up there to the top. You'll see a button called subscribe. Click that, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. It's free, no cost at all, but you'll get the news every morning about what happened, why it matters, and what's next from Alabama politics here in Montgomery and also in D.C.
All right, and we come back. Jimmy Rain, Auburn University trustee, mad at probably the highest-ranking Auburn alum in the state of Alabama. And we'll get into that when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Good to talk to everybody. Todd Stacey. Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And, you know, looking through the email that was sent out today, is this your homage here to last night's return of Game of Thrones? Is that what happened in the photos?
Yeah, you know, we like to have fun with memes and GIFs and things like that. If you're familiar with the email, you know I like to have a little bit of fun. Yeah, today was Game of Thrones. Lots of fun Game of Thrones GIFs. Couldn't help it. But, yeah, I like to have fun.
Yeah, that was. There were lots of uncomfortable moments last night in Game of Thrones. Some awkward moments. I wonder if it's something like that when you have the governor of the state and an Auburn alum getting chastised by Auburn University trustee, the yellow fella, Jimmy Rain.
Yeah, look, it's got to be a little bit tense, you know. So on Friday, they had a board meeting up at Auburn. And Jimmy Rain, who everybody knows, he's the yellow fella, you know, Great Southern Wood, I think the state's richest person or one of them, you know, and he's the state government chair for the Board of Trustees. And he stood up and said that Governor Kay Abbey's proposed budget, was not kind to Auburn. And he repeated that. It was really interesting. He was very pointed in his criticism of the budget that she proposed. Saying that Auburn did not get the same amount of increase that all the other colleges did. And it's true. I mean, if you look at the numbers, Auburn only got 5%, whereas other colleges got more like, you know, 7-8%. And he was specifically critical of Arthur Orr. Senator Arthur Orr chairs the Education Budget Committee. And so that doesn't happen a whole lot where somebody that, you know, influential and public criticizes the governor and the education budget chair, especially considering Jimmy Rain and Kay Abbey have known each other since they were at Auburn together.
Right.
He remembered that he chaired her inauguration committee. So he was a big-time supporter of hers, chaired the inauguration committee. You know, who knows how much, you know, has been donated over the years. So, yeah, it's very newsworthy. I quoted his comments, but also got reactions from Arthur Orr, who defended himself, saying, "Hey, I didn't even look at these proposals until they were already, you know, a bill," and defended his Athens State College up there in North Alabama. So, yeah, a little bit of awkwardness between old friends here. Who knows how serious the argument actually is? But they're talking about, you know, a couple million dollars.
Yeah, I mean, it's real money. But if you look at the percentages here. Yes, the school in Athens, UA Athens, big time. But other than that, I mean, compare like what Auburn 5.0196% versus University of South Alabama back here 5.4795%. I mean, it's not that percentage wise. We're not talking about massive differences. There's a lot of schools that are got just a 5-something% increase.
Yeah, and again, when you're talking about that many hundreds of millions of dollars and What Senator Orr was saying was that, you know, Athens State is a tiny university up there in North Alabama, and its whole budget is probably 4% of Auburn's entire budget. So, you know, why are they complaining? And this goes back a long way. I mean, a long time ago, it was very common to have fights among higher ed institutions in the legislature over funding. I mean, every year it was Auburn versus Alabama and everybody else. Years later, actually, probably about 10 years ago, Auburn and Alabama actually teamed up, and that was a very smart move because they, you know, they all can pull their own weight and basically box out everybody else. But over the last several years, the higher ed has not had these kind of bitter fights over dollars. So I'm interested to see how far this actually goes, whether they'll get really dug in and serious about demanding a bigger increase. And remember, all this comes from a formula, basically. The Alabama Commission on Higher Ed has a formula that it went about to determine who gets what. And they're all getting more money. It's just the number of the percentage increase that they're arguing about.
Yeah, that's something that we get in these discussions of ETF and funding schools in Alabama and all that. The higher education portion is rarely discussed, right? Yeah, we're talking K through 12 most of the time.
That's right, and that's mostly because they're happy. I mean, everybody would like to get more money, and certainly higher ed does not get the percentage that it did a long time ago. They blame that for tuition increases and things like that. But you know, they there's not a fight, you don't hear about it a whole lot. If Auburn hadn't, if Jimmy Rain hadn't done this and said this, we probably wouldn't be talking about it right now. But on the K-12 side, there's all kinds of different little factors that can, you know, levers you can pull in the budget that make a really big difference as far as number of teachers in the classroom, or the number of teachers, number of students in the classroom. Of course, there are, the big number is what the pay raise is going to be. They're wanting a pay raise this year. So, yeah, the K-12 portion of the budget is way more controversial usually, got way more people watching it than higher ed. At the same time, you're talking about lots of money that goes to higher ed, and it's a big investment for the state. You know, these institutions of higher learning, they're big investments for the state of Alabama, and a lot of them bring a lot more money back in. Talking about Auburn, talking about South Alabama, UAB, some of these research institutions.
Now, this also kind of goes and segues into my next question. Where do we sit on the dueling lotto bills, right? Because the discussion that 50% is going to go to school. Is that different between the two bills, or is that the same between the Auburton and the McClendon?
Well, the Auburton bill, which is the quote-unquote clean bill, does not say. It's just a straight-up yes or no lottery question on the ballot. And then presumably after that, they'd come in and figure out where the money goes. But on the McClendon side, you know, that's the one that has the 50-50 split. So they are in committee. They had a committee meeting the other day where both proposals were, you know, put forward and discussed. They didn't take a vote on either one. Of course, you had just different factions come out and give their opinion. My personal take on it, Sean, is that we're either going to get All Britain's, you know, quote-unquote clean bill, or not getting anything.
Oh, really?
I don't think they're going to let the one with the grandfathers in all the old dog trap casinos, I don't think they're going to let it go. We either get the clean one, or we don't have one at all.
Hey, explain that to folks, too, because we talked about it last week, and I had the AG on the show to talk about the recent raids, and, you know, I was wondering, hey, is there any reason that this came up then? He said it was a local thing, but explain to folks the grandfathering in the dog tracks or the pari-mutuel betting facilities. How does that work?
Yeah, and remember, that's my term, grandfathering them in. That's just kind of, to me, what it sounds like.
Okay.
So Jim McClendon's bill, the first one that got introduced, includes provisions that would allow these old dog track casinos. Y'all have got one down in Mobile, Victoryland, Birmingham Racecourse. I think there's five of these old dog track casinos, which, you know, several years ago, they don't really run dogs anymore. They do pari-mutuel, and they really make money off of these, off the electronic bingo machines, that, you know, basically slot machines. And there's always been a question about the legality of that. And they've tweaked the machines over the years to try to say that they're legal and all this. But there's, you remember, gosh, the gambling wars went on and on.
Yep.
And so they've always had a question about the legality. So what McClendon's bill would do is say, okay, we're going to wipe the slate clean and allow them to have what he calls a video lottery terminal. Basically, slot machines based on lottery instead of bingo that would be clear legally, no problem at all. And he argues we need that because you save all those people that are working at those places and we get revenue and yada yada. So that's his proposal. Well, you know, that basically grandfathers in the casino competition of the Porch Creek. So you can understand why the Porch Creek don't want that and prefer rather just a clean lottery bill that we get yes or no on gambling, on lottery.
Now, of course, you're now saying it's not between the two, but it's between the All Britain or nothing. That's going to be the choice.
That's my take. And,
yeah.
And look, I could be wrong. I just don't think that. I think the Porch Creeks have two things working in their favor. Number one, they are a lot more influential these days than the old dog track casino owners, by my estimation. Milt McGregor.
Yeah, that legacy.
Away.
Yeah, it's fading.
Yeah, you don't have the same just influence that group did. Plus, it's just easier to understand. It's easier for a lawmaker to say, look, I just voted yes on a straight up or down lottery bill. That's all I did. And that's easy to defend for a lawmaker. So I think that tends to give them the advantage. On the other hand, you know, some of these senators from the old Green, you know, Green Track area or some of these other places, they'll work very hard to kill that bill, and it'll be a tough fight.
We'll be watching it and be reading about it over at Alabama Daily News. Once again, Todd, tell people how to get the email.
Thanks, Sean. It's real easy. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Go right to the top and click subscribe. So when you don't have to pay anything. It's free, but I sure would like your feedback. Let me know how we're doing, and appreciate your reading.
All right, great stuff. We'll talk to you soon, and keep your eye on them tomorrow when they get back to work.
Absolutely. Thanks,
Sean. All right, Todd Stacy at Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And coming back, we're going to play, if you didn't catch it on Thursday, because it was late in the show on Thursday, my interview with Attorney General Steve Marshall about exactly, well, the bingo portion of this discussion. Welcome back home to Alabama. It can't just be a discussion about whether we're going to have a referendum on lottery. Has to have a side issue here of benefiting one group more than another. And we'll talk about that a little bit coming up.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, you heard an update there from Westwood One. I'm watching this, flames pouring out of Notre Dame, Notre Dame. And that's really what the news we have now. But, I mean, I'm looking at video, and it's smoke engulfing the cathedral and a plume of flames coming out as well. More news as it breaks on this. We will get it to you. Also coming up next hour, we mentioned it last week when we were talking about the ABC privatization bill. I think it was Senate Bill 77 brought by Arthur Orr. Senator Arthur Orr will join us at 1:30 coming up next hour, 1:30, and talk more about that. And also we'll get in that civil asset forfeiture bill that Todd Stacy discussed just a second ago. All right, I want to go to this because we just talked about it as we discussed lottery, and that's part of the discussion I had with Attorney General Steve Marshall. This happened on Thursday's show at the end of the show, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it on Friday, but I want to replay this because there's a couple things in here. Number one, talking about the ethics bill and the expected or proposed changes to the Alabama ethics bill, and then also a discussion of what is the law. This video bingo stuff, it seems to me we're back to the video bingo wars of a decade ago in this state. Are we restarting that? Heck, a decade ago, try 3-4 years ago. We talked about that on Thursday with Attorney General Steve Marshall. Here's a cut from that interview. Continuing our conversation with Attorney General of the state of Alabama, Steve Marshall. Thanks for being on with us this afternoon. And what about, this is something you and I have talked about before, ethics legislation in the state, but help me understand what has happened today. I mean, a couple years ago, there's sweeping ethics reform, and now there's a change to the sweeping ethics reform that was good and is going to do what? Help me understand.
Well, I think it's going to do several things. It's kind of ironic in some ways, the timing of the discussion, in that we filed our brief in the My Covered case this week, in which we spoke specifically about the 2010 ethics laws that were heralded as some of the strongest in the nation, and there to deter and find those that would engage in corrupt behavior. And it's interesting that, you know, the sponsor and the one that really championed that bill, Mike Hubbard, you know, is the one that was ultimately convicted in Lee County. And so one of the things that that conviction shows us is, number one, that the law works. You know, we had the jury in Lee County bring that conviction. We've had the Court of Criminal Appeals, except for one count in which they reversed, but all the other counts they upheld. And what I think that court decision did, and what I believe the Alabama Supreme Court will say, is that our laws not only provide clarity for those who are seeking to know what conduct is legal or illegal, but also the fact that they're constitutional. And so the effort that has been discussed this week, Senator Albritton, who is from down in your neck of the woods, who again, I think is a very good lawyer, it just simply wants to take a very different approach, that rather than making certain conduct criminal, and specifically I would highlight relating to things given to public officials by lobbyists and others, rather than make some of those actions criminal, he simply wants those to be disclosures, so that, you know, if a lobbyist bought, for example, if gentleman was in the legislature and he took you out for a $100 meal, then we're depending on that lobbyist to identify that $100 meal in a filing that the public could look at and make a decision whether or not to keep him in office. We think, although that approach, I understand why he wants to do it, would hamper our ability to effectively deter criminal behavior, more particularly corrupt behavior, and that and it relates to several of the investigations we have ongoing now, would really hamper our ability to use the law effectively, I think, for what the people of Alabama want us to do.
I hear, though, that this is so broad, so far-reaching right now as it stands with the ethics law that one-fifth of the people of Alabama fall under this, you know, that they would be somebody who could be questioned, right, because they're in the development business or something like that.
Yeah, I think, and also because of the definition of family, you know, in part of what the ethics law applies to and who is subject to the conduct are the family members of public officials and public employees, which goes to beyond children, siblings, to in-laws and others. And I think that's one of the things that we looked at this summer when we were a part of the ethics group that was examining and trying to make recommendations to the legislature. And I do think that everybody in that room recognize that maybe we need to consider the definition of family being not quite as broad, but yet what we've seen through this legislation is, I think, going too far in the other direction. And I know from our office's perspective, and I've also heard this from the Ethics Commission, that we believe will hamper our ability to effectively deter corrupt behavior in the state.
You mentioned the Hubbard trial, and I'll point out to folks that may be surprised by this still that Mike Hubbard's not yet gone to jail, correct? I mean, he has not served any time.
Yeah, he is. And I will say this, he's not being treated any differently than any other defendant that would be similarly situated. He's posted an appeal bond. He was eligible for an appeal bond. And so what is simply keeping him from serving the sentence that was ordered by the judge in Lee County is for his appeals to be exhausted. The Court of Criminal Appeals has rendered their decision. Now the defendant, Mr. Hubbard, has 14 days from Monday to be able to file his brief. We'll see whether or not the Supreme Court does oral arguments. But at that point in time, it'll be in the court's hands to render their decision and for us to know the ultimate fate of Mr. Hubbard, whether or not he's going to prison or not. We believe that we presented a very compelling case that the jury in Lee County got it right. And we expect the Supreme Court to affirm what we've done.
All right. I always say, at least to me, the best or the most interesting to be to last. You're probably going to shake your head. Come on, Sullivan.
That's all right.
But so two raids this week in Jefferson County on whatever the semantics are, charity bingo halls or whatever the accurate term is by your office. What was going on the day you raided versus days before? Did the law change? Did your understanding of what they were doing change? Help me understand what is legal, what is not legal.
All right. First of all, it's actually one raid, Sean, and it was on four different facilities.
Okay. Yeah.
You hear this moniker of electronic bingo or charity bingo. What was going on there is a smaller level casino with slot machines. I mean, that's simply what's there. The Alabama Supreme Court has been abundantly clear at this point to say that bingo is played on a card against other people in a traditional way that you and I have always known it. And yet people are attempting to somehow or another grasp through the use of technology this idea that what is really a slot machine is somehow or another the ability to play bingo, not on a card, but on a machine. And over seven different decisions, the court has come back and been clear. And there was none of this in Jefferson County until recently when a sheriff there said, although he understood it was illegal, that he didn't want to enforce the law. It's been publicly reported that his brother was one of those who was seeking a permit to be able to do it, which I think is a clear conflict of interest.
Yeah.
I think the public can realize that. But you had the one of the district attorneys where three of these facilities were say publicly that they should cease and desist because the conduct itself was illegal, but she said she didn't have the ability to enforce that cease and desist. What we have is ongoing criminal investigations, which resulted partly in the execution of those search warrants on those facilities, and we seized records, which are very important for us in this investigation. We seized over 1,100 machines and also money that was at those facilities, and these investigations are ongoing. Yeah, the one thing that I would say, Sean, that probably gets missed in this is not, you know, even during the campaign, that all you want to do is stop elderly people from being able to go play a game of fun. That's not it at all. What we do know, and I think what has been proven in this state, is that there are multiple criminal aspects that go along with the rise of gambling. You look no further than in our history in Phoenix City and what happened to an attorney general that was very strong at that point to say he was going to shut down illegal activity. Ultimately loses his life, and loses his life at the hands of those in government who were shielding those who were engaged in criminal behavior. You know, y'all have an attorney general that is elected to enforce the law, and that is the responsibility that I accepted when I took that oath. And so when we see in Jefferson County the failure to enforce what is a clear violation, then we had no other alternative as part of our ongoing investigation than to stop that illegal activity. I mean, we went from no machines that we were aware of to over 1,000 in less than a six-week period. And but for, I believe, us stepping in as we did this week, that illegal activity would have grown. And not only would it have been an issue in Jefferson County, but somebody's going to argue, well, why can't I do it in Mobile County? Why right. can't I do it in Baldwin County when it is a clear violation of our Constitution? You know, the good thing is that we have a representative democracy. They get a chance to decide in the legislature whether or not we change the policy of this state. But right now, these are illegal games. They are games of chance and not authorized under our law.
And that's, I mean, from my perspective, I don't have a dog in the hunt, but I don't really care. It doesn't, I will continue to argue, as I have for a decade, that the societal ills that come with gambling already come back home into Alabama from other states. So I don't think we're on an island that can avoid that. So let's move forward. But what does bother me as a citizen is when I think the law is this, and then it's not. Like, what did you say? The sheriff there said he just was not going to enforce that law.
He wasn't going to enforce it. Felt like that he just disclaimed it as a priority. Said, excuse me, that it was a misdemeanor. That he just didn't feel like that was where his focus needed to be, which again was just a green light to those who wanted to engage in criminal behavior to go forward. You know, I give you another example. Let's assume that you have a local prosecutor that simply says, I really don't agree with the laws of the state of Alabama on marijuana, and I'm just going to allow for recreational marijuana to take place, although the legislature has never endorsed that. It's the same concept. It basically has taken what is our structure of government being one in which the executive branch enforces the law and the legislature makes the law, to vest within the executive branch the ability basically to decide what the law is. It's the same example that, you know, you and I have talked about a little bit with sanctuary cities, where we have a clear responsibility for law enforcement and others to work on our immigration laws, but yet, especially in outside of Alabama, you have cities that say, we're going to disregard what federal immigration laws are. We're not going to allow you to enforce orders and to become this safe haven. We are a nation of laws. We need to enforce them, and this happens to be in a situation in which illegal gambling is involved.
Is history repeating itself all over again here? You got a warehouse with all those machines in them now?
They are seized, and they're there waiting for us to be able to file our forfeiture action.
There we go. Attorney General Steve Marshall, is always a pleasure talking. Hopefully you'll come back on with us soon.
Look forward to seeing you in studio, Sean. Thank you.
All right. Steve Marshall joining us right here on... All right, so there's a little bit of the interview from last week. Lucky for you, you want to hear the whole interview. It's waiting for you on the podcast page, front page of FMTalk1065.com. Just click the link for podcasts. Go to Thursday, hour number 2, Midday Mobile, and get the full half-hour interview with Attorney General Steve Marshall. Also, remember, you can subscribe to get those podcasts delivered to iTunes or Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio. A lot of places out there to grab them, so go get signed up today. And we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, 1251, FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile, Monday style. Hey, coming up on Thursday at the Mobile Convention Center, it's the Taste of Mobile. Get this, the 40th annual Taste of Mobile. A tasty event. Kind of run through some of the vendors there. In other words, the vendors, like, that's such a media contact, but that's the kind of stuff they talk about in the email stuff. So here's our vendors list. How about this? Here's restaurants going to have food there. How about that? Half Shell Oyster House, Neiman's Catering, Wenzel's, Taco Mama, Baumhauer's, Dolphins, Golden Corral, Chicken Salad Chick, The Battle House, Savor Mobile Catering, Hall Sausage and Wholesale Meats, UJB, Texas de Brazil, Jerusalem Cafe, Shrimp Basket, Tiffy B's Eatery, BJ's Brew House, Ship Shape Urban Farms, Wan Mei Asian Noodle Chinese Style, Rennie's Honey Butter, Gulf Distributing. Oh, I like the taste of that. Rouse's Voodoo Kitchen, Walk-Ons, E&K. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And we'll post that up. But that's happening on Thursday. Doors open at 6. It is the Taste of Mobile, the 40th annual. And let's do this, Dalton, if we'll grab caller number 6 right now at 343-0106. I'll give you a 4-pack of tickets. These are a $25 value. You have a chance also there to win a Carnival cruise. I don't know if you'll have any people you have to rescue on your Carnival cruise like the Fantasy did over the weekend. But this is a event going on once again on Thursday. Family 4-pack or friends 4-pack, or however you want to do it, a 4-pack of tickets to the 40th annual Taste of Mobile. Caller number 6, good luck, 343-0106. All right, watching the latest here out of Paris, and we mentioned it a second ago, you heard an update there from Westwood One at the bottom of the hour, that Notre Dame, the cathedral, is on fire. These pictures are unbelievable, the smoke and the flames coming out of Notre Dame. I mean, just now the flames have built even more here since the last time I looked at that feed. Melissa Bell from Westwood One with more on this.
You can see them really getting to the very top of that tallest spire of the building. And it is inside, of course, that the damage is likely to prove to have been worse, unimaginable really for the time being. As I say, Parisians all around me have gathered onto every vantage point, onto every bridge, all around the building to try and get as close as they can to what is France's most famous cathedral, essentially go up in smoke.
It is unbelievable. I don't know how there will be much to salvage from the video we're seeing right now. 2,400 feet high, the medieval Catholic cathedral. Listen to this. The cathedral, so Notre Dame was begun. They began the work, job site there, y'all, for Notre Dame in 1160 and completed by 1260. When we talk about old buildings here in the New World, that's one thing. And Lord knows where we sit right here in Mobile. We're one of the cities in the country that has that long, long history, older than the nation. But you start talking about Notre Dame started in 1160, completed in 1260. Now, it's had modifications over the years and all that, but wow. Wow. And for what maybe they will be able to save something here, but I mean the video coming out here fully engulfed in flames, as they say crews are fighting the fire there. Parisian fire crews are fighting it, but it's unbelievable. Just the imagery of this, of the cathedral. They said they were doing work. The way I understand the news report right now, they're doing work on the cathedral, on the spire, I think, and then that's the best guess right now, that something must have happened during that. And I mean, that's just the assumption right now, that the work was being done and then all of a sudden there was this fire. I guess they've been doing the work for a while, but they're assuming maybe it has something to do with that. Here's the BBC is coming in and saying the cause is not immediately clear, but officials are saying it could be linked to the renovation work going on at the cathedral. Last year, the Catholic Church in France launched an urgent appeal for funds to save the cathedral that they said was starting to crumble. Remember, they kind of got their... It has lasted a while. They started it in 1160. So by 2019, probably needs a little remodel work, which they've done over time. But they said, once again, the officials say it could be linked to the renovation work. They're not saying for sure it is, but it was... I don't know. I mean, you're just seeing nothing but smoke and flames pouring out of Notre Dame right now. We'll keep you up to date on those stories. President Trump is tweeting right now, said, "So horrible to watch the massive fire at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Perhaps flying water tankers could be used to put it out. Must act quickly." Not a bad idea, but do they have those? I mean, do they have the issues that, you know, we have those big water tankers and the helicopter systems and all that to fight wildfires. Do they have that? Do they have anything like that in France? Do they have the need for that? They said it was a... now they're saying the $6.8 million, I guess, or is that euro? I guess dollar. They're saying $6.8 million renovation to the cathedral. And also the French president, Emmanuel Macron, has canceled a planned speech to the nation that he had slated due to the fire at Notre Dame. Obviously, this is a very big deal for Parisians, I'm sure, all people in France, and listen, for people all around the world, as something that old now in what looks like almost complete flames. I mean, it looks like the entirety, it has some sort of fire going on it there at Notre Dame. Tell you what, we'll run to the Westwood One news update here and get more on it. And congratulations, John Leach and Daphne just picked up that four-pack of tickets for the Taste of Mobile, 40th annual Taste of Mobile. That is Thursday starting at 6 at the Convention Center. And we'll give you more chances to win these coming up on maybe tomorrow morning or this show tomorrow on a Tuesday. I'll hook you up with that. All right. Coming right back, hour number two. And coming up next hour, two, State Senator Arthur Orr joins us. We'll talk about his push to privatize liquor sales in the state of Alabama and the pushback from a lot of groups.